There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the Square Ball Weekly Show number 260. Comes to you in three parts. We have a preview of Newcastle coming up in part two. Part three, we're going to pick heroes and villains. First, we'll do all the Leeds United news. Show is brought to you by Levi Solicitors. 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. That's up to 15% discount on your legal fees on conveyancing instructions until the end of January 2022. If you like what we do, you want to support us as well, TSB Plus is our membership package where you get loads of stuff. You get the extra podcasts, video and audio, a dedicated feed that's ad-free, priority access to the match ball after a game, all the digital mags from 2009 to now. You get merchandise discounts, daily email from Moscow, which is very, very good, although he's far too modest to admit it. And it's all at thesquareball.net/plus. And the best bit, a 1 month trial is available now. We've extended the trial so you can dive in for a month. We know everyone's skint in January. Try it on for size, see if you like it.
If you want to try the digital mag this month, Danny Maguire interview that Rob's done, that's very good, alongside loads of other brilliant stuff as well. And you get the cheeky 10% discount off of that new El Gol Para Leeds United shirt we've done. So sign up, get the discount, and then probably like cancel it before the subscription.
You're not doing the sales pitch very well, Moscow. But
I don't know. I'm looking at it from the customer's point of view.
Okay. New mag out this weekend as well. On sale from usual spots around Elland Road.
Yeah, yes. If you think it's good digitally, wait till you see it on paper.
Looks beautiful. Right, into the Leeds United news. And we've had a new contract for Adam Forshaw. And as sure as eggs is eggs, he was always going to pick up an injury, wasn't he, in West Ham? You know, people accuse Leeds fans of being like overly negative about things that are happening with the club. Things like this are exactly why football fans are as damaged as we are. Like, it's just the fates, the football gods, not smiling on us on this occasion. They're mocking us.
We should say that he has since said it's not a bad injury, hasn't he?
But still, you cannot have seen when he went down and you're going, oh, it's his hamstring, and he's holding his hamstring in that West Ham game. I thought, not again.
Yeah, he's described it as a small hamstring injury on Instagram. I'm fighting to be ready for Saturday. If not, I'll be back straight after the break.
Yeah, don't fight for Saturday. Adam, take it easy, rest, get yourself ready for after the international break. You could tell when he went down because there was so many players kind of going over to him and saying, like, are you all right? What's happened? Or Junior Firpo standing like 10 yards away going, can I get a doctor? Anybody want to look at this
You've been dicking about with Lionel Messi, Junior. You've not had it as bad as Adam this last couple of years.
I think that's the thing as well. I think that's where the concern came from. And it is a little bit, you're still on edge with him when something like this happens, but it's not the first setback. He's had setbacks since the initial kind of being ready to come back and got over them quickly. Like the last time he was out, we wondered whether he'd be able to come back from that at all, and he came back superbly. So a couple of weeks out, it could happen to anybody. Generally happens to Leeds players.
Could be worse. Junior Firpo as well, as we mentioned there, he got that knock to the head and everyone thought, oh, are we going to be missing him at West Ham? We only needed him for 20 minutes, didn't we, as it turned out?
Yeah, that was another one. He's never been fit, has he, for Firpo since we've had him. I think Bielsa described his time here as being disjointed or something along those lines. And it does feel like every time he comes in and starts to play well, he's out again for a few weeks.
He's not really used his body for a while, has he? When he's been milling around Barcelona's reserves and, according to the reports, not training at all, because if it got a bit cloudy outside, Lionel Messi didn't fancy it, so nobody got to do it because he was in charge, wasn't he? So he's kind of just been pissing about at Barcelona doing nothing for a while.
And he did an interesting interview with Adam Pope last week that might apply across the rest of the squad as well, because he was talking about how, because one of the things that kept him out of the team was COVID, and he says that it's not the physical impact that COVID has had on him or has on, he was talking about athletes in general, because he's saying we're quite strong, we're quite ready to withstand a virus like this. So that wasn't a problem. The problem was you can't do anything for 10 days and you can do, he said, you can do some bike work and you can do some stuff at home, but it's nowhere near enough to keep you fit. And then you go back into training and all your teammates have been training hard for 10 days. And so they're all at this level and you're at a lower level. And you then have to, you feel like you have to work harder to catch up to their level of fitness. And you injure yourself while trying to get up to their fitness. So it's kind of like this constant a hamster wheel that you keep getting knocked off of with injuries. But that's kind of like, and when you think about the players that we've had with COVID, like Click, obviously, Stuart Dallas, Harrison had it as well, didn't he? And probably there's several others. You always keep it quite quiet as to who has or hasn't had it. Then it kind of then, you wonder if that is a factor in how many players have then got these muscle injuries and all these strains and pulls, because a lot of them aren't massive. When you see Forshaw hobbling off and then he actually says, no, I could be all right for the next game, it is just, it's a little pull, and you wonder whether all the attention that's on Marcelo Bielsa's training methods apply. And there was a massive thing in the Telegraph on Saturday or Sunday morning that Mike McGrath, who writes a lot about Leeds, was saying it's time that we really need to look at what Bielsa's doing in training because of all the injuries, and, you know, they'll never get through this, then we beat West Ham. That maybe the other side of it is also, is it an impact of the pandemic that players trying to come back from COVID
are just disruptive?
It's disrupting the training patterns, and it's not, and maybe there is something that they need to do in training to adapt to that, but it is an unprecedented situation of how do you put a squad of footballers through a pandemic that does these things that we've never in professional football or sport history been in this situation. So it's all, but it was interesting hearing him describing, Firpo describing it as that's what's happened to him.
Yeah, more disruptive than physical.
Yeah.
Mm. Paddy Bamford, he was rumoured to be almost fit for a couple of weeks, and then there was talk of him featuring versus West Ham. We had somebody tweet us with photos from Leeds Bradford Airport and the fire alarm test is just going off as we record this. You may or may not hear that.
But yeah, there was talk that his wife was in labour and he was going to fly down and all this sort of stuff, but we've not heard anything.
It's either his hip's knackered or she's giving birth, and somebody should probably find out which one it is because they're vastly different. I was going to say afflictions then, but childbirth, not an affliction. It's a miracle. So he didn't play. Greenwood played football for half a game and now his face has exploded.
Mm.
If you are to believe his Instagram.
From his Instagram, yeah. Somebody got some sort of filter on it. But he is very clearly in hospital. So what he's had done, we don't really know, do we?
It looks like he's had a rearranging of his face, if this filter's anything to go by. He's got two gigantic eyes, no nose. He said his nose taken off.
Mm.
And a massive mouth.
It's knee surgery. Ah. Was the thing.
Have they done this to his face at the same time, or is that...
Well, while you're there,
a secondary...
You take advantage, like, you do anything about this.
But, knee surgery, that doesn't sound like something you shake off in a week.
No, I think he'll probably need a little bit longer to recover. Don't know exactly what part of his knee they had to do something, but yeah, they've done some surgery on his knee.
Like, so, Ayling wasn't out for that long, was he, after knee surgery this season? It was a bit of a, I think Phil Hay described it as a clean-up job. Mm. But they just go in and get out some floaty bits.
Clean up.
whatever's in there.
Have a dig about. See
crisp
what you can
packets
find.
And stuff.
But it's maybe a judgment on him, because Bielsa did reveal that Greenwood is responsible for injuring Joffe. He fell on Joffe. I don't know if he meant to let the name out, because he kept it under wraps for a couple of weeks. He was, Gelhardt injured in training. And then he was like, yeah, Gelhardt, somebody fell on him in training. And then this week, he's like, Greenwood, Sam fell on him.
It'll evolve in the next couple of weeks as the injuries evolve, but this story will evolve into a he dived on him and rugby tackled him or something
like
that.
Yeah, he was swinging around above his head by his shoes. And that hurt him. But yeah, so that's what we know that Greenwood and Gelhardt, great mates, and they share a house, so maybe they still do. Mm. But they could maybe, I think it would be better for their friendship and our team if they didn't hurt each other.
Mm. It's like taking kids to like a soft play area and they end up crying, don't they, injuring each other in the ball pool and
I
stuff.
I mean, if we take Leeds players to a soft play area, they'll find the one razor blade that somebody's dropped in the bottom of the ball pool. It's absolutely guaranteed.
That's probably where Archie Gray does genuinely go, is that young. Rafinha, we're going to be missing him towards the end of January, because there is the international week, although there are no European fixtures. It's to accommodate, obviously, AFCON is going on, and we've got South American round of fixtures for there.
They've already qualified Brazil. Let him stay.
World Cup qualifies, but he's been called up, hasn't he?
Selfish.
There are technically no games.
Yeah.
But it's whether we get forced to play Aston Villa and Liverpool. But if we do, they have many more players. Mm. Both AFCON and I think Liverpool have three called up for Brazil. Villa, if we play them, Coutinho will be away with Brazil. And I think they've got one
Luis?
Or two.
Does he go in there?
I think he might do, yeah. So we can cope without Rafinha. And we know that Liverpool cannot cope without, you know, one player. You know, if Van Dijk wasn't available,
well, no, they can. They'll just moan about it a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's almost worth rescheduling the Liverpool game for that week just to really upset Jurgen Klopp to the absolute maximum.
Mm. When will we actually know? When
Klopp decides.
Okay. It just feels weird. It feels like there's this weird thing like hanging over of there might be some games this week. Mm. Equally, there might not.
Well, anyway, Brazil are playing Paraguay and Sash's favourite country, Ecuador. So we'll see what happens, whether we get to play those or not. We'll play them at some point, I imagine.
Yeah, we might as well.
I mean, Burnley are going to have a right old laugh, aren't they, trying to fit in all their fixtures. They've only played 17 games. They've got a lot to... They're going to have like 5 games in hand on people potentially by this weekend, if we're not careful.
What's going to happen is they're going to realise they have to play all these, then they can moan about that instead. They're like, that'll be Deitch's complaint later in the season.
What will he say?
It's too many fucking games.
For the championship next season.
46 to get ready for, yeah.
The complaint won't be from Burnley because they can't, but it'll be like Moyes has been this week because it was Norwich who called off their game that meant the West Ham match had to be played on Wednesday. And it's all the teams that are supposed to be playing Burnley who will have to fit games against Burnley in later in the season. They're the ones who quite justifiably, Moyes kind of does have a point. He just needed to shut up whinging about it.
Read the room as well, given that you were playing against Leeds plus some children.
Yeah, exactly. He's picked the wrong moment to moan about it. But
and we will also go back massively on this point when we get to heroes and villains later on in the show.
The the other teams who will have to fit in the games against Burnley through no fault of their own is they should just refuse to play.
All the game postponements as well, and listening to other fans, you realise there's a sort of madness of the transfer window as well, where every club thinks after the transfer window they'll be stronger. But there's only a limited number of players in the world. But every club thinks they need to sign 3 or 4 good players. And where they think they're getting those 3 or 4 good players from, who knows really? Because everyone is going like, well, if we can postpone this game and then we'll get someone back from injury, we'll maybe be able to buy it. Like Burnley will be thinking, well, we need to buy a striker.
Well, they get Cornet back as well, don't they?
Yeah, because they obviously sold Chris Wood. So they're like, well, we just need to get a striker. But everyone needs a striker, and everyone wants to keep their good strikers. So where are all these players actually come
from?
They'll
still be Burnley.
Mm.
And if you're a striker with the option of going to Burnley and you see how many games you're going to be playing in how many weeks, yeah, a bit much of that.
I'll go to Newcastle instead and play slightly fewer games and still go down.
I know that if you throw a sponge at Twitter, you'll hit an idiot. But there was one Arsenal fan, I think yesterday, who was saying that one of the reasons it was fair for them to call off the North London derby was because, you know, we were down to these bare bones and yes, our defender was fit, but you can't expect us to play a defender in midfield.
Right.
That was their sincere opinion. You can't expect us to be...
So the Premier League are allowing for tactical shifts now. Wow.
Well, yeah, his point of view was that, yeah, we had enough defenders, but we didn't have enough midfielders. So it wasn't fair to make us play when we... And people were just like, why don't you play your defenders in midfield?
Look at George Graham's teams of 96, 97. There were often 8 defenders in those, and there was not a problem with it apart from entertainment-wise.
Yeah. It's it's strange how people will just, maybe we do it to an extent, but the desperation to make the world fit what your football club has decided to do, whether it's right or wrong, is just madness.
Just on AFCON, we need to say well done to Max Gradle for scoring that winner in the Côte d'Ivoire's first match against Equatorial Guinea.
It was a great goal.
Good kit he's wearing as well in that one. It's kind of white with some black speckly stripes.
I think I can congratulate him on the goal. It almost, like the quality of it, it's a beautiful strike, almost makes up for him being 34.
No, he's not. He's 20.
No, I know. It's really unsettling that Max Gradle is now the 34-year-old experienced captain of Ivory Coast, Côte d'Ivoire. And an emotional one as well. He's still started... with tears in his eyes after scoring that goal because his father died in January, and because of the pandemic and everything, he couldn't go to his funeral. So there was a lot of emotion in that moment. But hopefully Côte d'Ivoire could win it. He's got, although they only drew 2-2 with Sierra Leone, but then Aouar Max was on the bench for that one. But there up front, they had...
Who was it?
I just want to check my facts, so I'm not...
he's Googling it. I would say, mind you, did you see the Cote d'Ivoire keeper? I think he... I don't know if it looks... It looked, should we say...
Is he the one who falls on his face?
Questionably.
And throws it backwards.
He fell over and he sort of threw it backwards out of his legs and it looked a little bit... questionable.
Well, he's completely knackered his knee in the process.
Right.
It's, the pitch was a farmer's field and as he's going for it, his knee has buckled underneath him and so... I think he got stretched off.
Okay.
And yes, because they ended up with, it was Serge Aurier of Tottenham who went in goal.
Okay.
Instead they've got Eric Bailey, doesn't he play for Scum?
He does.
But he's, you know, a Premier League player technically. Wilf Zaha is up front with Sebastian Heller and Nicolas Pepe. So the three players who are keeping Max Gradle out of the team in this game are pretty good players. All in all, they've got, it's where Maxwell Cornet has gone from Burnley, so escaping Deitch's madness. So there's a good team there. And I'm assuming Max Gradle is the captain of the crew, but...
For the sake of Ivory Coast, he would
break himself in two, but they're only playing him in certain matches because he's a doddering old man.
No, he's not.
Max Gradle.
Speaking of which, Lewis Baker has left Chelsea just 2 years short of his testimonial year.
You see that?
He was there for 8 years. Do you know how many games he played in that time?
It was two.
Yes,
two, wasn't it?
And he's gone to Stoke, hasn't he? So out of the frying pan and into the potteries.
Yeah,
maybe. Might work. Let's talk about the 49ers before we get on to transfers quickly. They won a game.
That's good.
In the postseason. So it's still going on after the season's ended, the regular season. Yep, so it works. The playoffs. Do you recognise the word playoffs?
Is it like a trip to Myanmar or is it more important than that?
More important than that.
Okay.
Questionable, actually. They played in the wild card game in the playoffs. We know we recognise the playoffs, and then in traditional sort of League United, we have a good partnership.
Why is it? What makes it a wild card?
I think some of the lower ranked teams get in based on wild card entries, and they play off against each other. But now they've qualified through the wild card game. They beat the Dallas Cowboys.
I've heard of them.
Who play in Arlington, and they won there in that big mega dome stadium that they've got with the big tellies. And then they're into the divisional game now. Against, I believe it's the Packers, isn't it? The Green Bay Packers they're playing next, off the top of my head. So, good luck.
Yeah, great bunch of lads.
But they did their best to throw it away. They were well in front, and then
has it earned many money? And can they buy us a central midfielder?
That's what they should do, isn't it? As a celebration, yeah, maybe so. On to transfers. Then we're getting linked to some firm names now. Ola Aina, who's the guy who's is at Torino at the minute, sort of plays right back, left back. Defensive midfielder, utility man, was at Fulham at one stage on loan last season.
Did badly there, apparently. But I suppose everyone did badly at Fulham last season.
Yeah, and there's always that thing about giving him to Bielsa, who's a real coach, and making him better, like he makes everyone better.
He's played more games for Chelsea than Lewis Bate.
Well, there you go. Well, pedigree. He's got an absolute pedigree.
Got a few games there before moving on. And we got Pontus from Torino, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
That worked out well.
Yeah. So what could go wrong?
Exactly. I see no difference.
Tony DiRigo went there.
Very true.
Excellent.
John Charles played in the same city. So,
well,
it's perfect.
It's made, isn't it? It's a fairy tale. Do you want to buy Jason Knight from Derby? And Irish fans who have kept track of this said that he's a good midfielder for them. Should we buy them off him for a paltry sum just so they can keep going for another week or two?
Well, they're talking about wanting £8 million. I think we'll just wait and we'll have him for free in a few weeks' time when the club is disbanded.
They're in real trouble, aren't they?
Seems to make more sense.
It's interesting, we were recording on Tuesday lunchtime and this morning on TalkSport, I think Simon Jordan has been trashing Derby's fans. So now you were celebrating Mel Avery and everybody on strings when actually you were financially doping loads. And now you're paying the price for it. So there you go. Mosca, you just got, is that a £2 coin?
Yeah, I found a £2 coin. It's the only change I've got on me. But I think I could either buy Jason Knight this week or the club next week.
Yeah.
But I get a lot of debt with the club, don't I? So I might just have the footballer.
The thing with the financial doping is that when Ben Johnson won that gold medal.
Actual doping. Seoul Olympics. Well, it was 1988.
Yeah, it's just choose your flavour of cheating. Are you cheating with money or cheating with drugs? That's, like, I think doping is maybe, financial doping is. Is it the right word when you might be better just saying financial cheating and drug cheating?
Mm. But whatever it was, you have to say Ben Johnson did it well because he won. No one had ever run that fast before.
Mm.
And granted, the medal was taken off him.
Yeah.
But at least he did run faster than anyone else. No one can take that away from him. What did Derby do?
Well, they won
Leeds once.
They won at Elland Road, didn't they? So That's their big achievement.
The worst bit is that they're living rent-free.
That's so we'll
because all I think about when we're in the Premier League mid-table is bloody Derby every bloody
week.
But
we will have Jason Knight off him just because we can.
And we should just maybe get him and what should we have him do? Working in the canteen?
Well, it can be like, he can be mates with Lewis Bate, can't he, or something?
Could be a chauffeur.
Isn't that the other one's job?
I think all of the Derby players are just, they'll be very experienced and safe drivers now after what the squad went through.
Absolutely. We've also been linked to Nicholas Raskin, who is, and it says on the sheet here, 2-year-old standard Liège midfielder for €6 million euro, according to the Sunday Mirror. It feels a little bit young. I mean, I know Archie Gray is sort of toddling around in short trousers, etc. But
yeah, that could be a typo on my part, I think, the fact that he's two.
The dash key is really close to the zero key.
20.
Right.
He's 20, yes. Yeah. Yes, being 20 makes more sense than being... than being two.
I've changed that for you now then.
Okay,
so we've been linked to Nicholas Raskin, who's a 20-year-old standard Liège midfielder for €6 million euro, according to the Sunday Mirror. Although it did seem like somebody responded to that within the club and sort of poured cold water on that. So that one's, put that one to bed, shall we?
Oh, okay. The Mirror seemed to be have transfer news because they were also, it was admittedly the Daily Mirror rather than the Sunday Mirror, was saying that we are no longer in for Lewis O'Brien as well. David Anderson said words to the effect of like, that ship has sailed or something.
So. Okay.
I wanted to do my joke about we shouldn't sign a player from standard Liège. We should get one from premium Liège. We want a good one.
Yeah. You've done it. I enjoyed it. Yeah. So thank you for that. But Raskin looks decent. He was picked out as one of the 60 best young talents in the world, according to The Guardian. They do this every year.
In 2018, yeah. Oh, right. I did look down the list. None of them have turned out to be world beaters as yet, but you know they are all at like 20, so
just the worst kind of fan, Michael, writing all these kids off.
You can't expect them to be great, but
do you expect Cody Drame to be great? I mean, this feels like he's last week's news. Now we've won at West Ham.
I mean, on the one hand, we've been taking the piss of Lewis Baker for being at Chelsea and never playing for him. Maybe he's got a point.
For what it's worth, I understand a young player's desire to want to play football week in, week out, but you can't help but feel that Bielsa's position on this, because it feels like he almost talking like a man who's been betrayed.
To look at it from Drama's point of view for a minute, there has been a vacancy at right back this season, and he's played Shackleton and he's played Dallas. And so I can see why he might be like, well, if not now, when? And I guess Bielsa's response to that would be, well, you're not...
Last week.
And when those other players are available, they are better than you.
Mm.
So they play, so get better.
Yeah.
You're in with a chance, but you're not there yet, which and I guess then it does come down to the player to say, well, I think I am, or I think I want to play games, but at a lower level. Maybe if I'm not good enough for you, I am good enough for
Cardiff. There's also there's reports of like, if you've not maybe been as integrated into the group as some of the other young players who've kind of really leaned into it, you know, like you saw a little bit of evidence about that. I don't know if you're aware that, but he wasn't following any of the other team on like Instagram and vice versa. None of them were following him. So you wonder, because you know, there's that senior circle within the club. And if you're to believe reports, then they're saying that he hasn't really kind of pushed himself into that and maybe gained the acceptance of that senior group in the way that someone like Gelhardt has, who they've been talking up. Mm. You know, so maybe it makes sense in just even socially, from a social point of view, for him to take himself out of that group. I don't know.
I mean, if he's looking to be antisocial, he's going to spend time with Steve Morrison, hasn't he? So
he's going to poison his mind against Leeds.
It is an interesting question overall as to what's best for player development. Bielsa's point of view is that training with us and being in a squad that gives you a chance of playing in the Premier League is a really good place to be in. It's almost, and I'm interested in how it's becoming seen as old school, this idea that you need to go and learn your craft at the bottom of a league somewhere, and that to be a top footballer, you've got to spend some time learning whatever Morrison and his coaching staff can teach you. And the coaching staff at Cardiff are, you know, I don't want to badmouth the records, but it's like, an ex-Cardiff and Huddersfield player whose name now escapes me, who he is very much, he knows the club. And then there's another player who spent his entire playing career in the Welsh League, apart from a few games for Bristol, which is basically Wales. Hello, if you're in Bristol, by the way. He's only crossed the border a couple of times. And there's really no kind of good coaching experience. And it's a truism long held that you need to go and play games and learn the game. But then, and I think I've said a lot of times that Phil Foden never going out on loan from Manchester City, never really actually, when you look at it, I don't think he actually played that many times for their under 23s. He's just since, so his first Premier League games were 2017-18 season, he played five. and then three in Europe. And it's just been first team training. And then over the years in the Premier League, he's gone 5, 13, 23, 28 last season. They're just gradually building his minutes.
Yeah.
And that was good enough to make him one of the hottest prospects at the European Championships and looking like one of the world's best footballers. So there's not this, there's not a tried and true one size fits all model anymore. Whereas where before, I don't even know if it was true before, because when you think of our last great batch of youngsters, when you had Woodgate and McPhail and, you know, the guy who married her off Emmerdale and Alan Smith and all those players coming through, they didn't go out on loan. Milner went out on loan after the debut for the, after making his debut, but he was 16. So there was kind of, and they were getting him out of the way of a relegation battle and then brought him back into it. But apart from that, it was very much just like, you lot are good enough. You've learned everything from Eddie Gray. We'll put you in the Premier League straight away and you'll be absolutely fine and build you up that way. So this idea that you have to go out on loan to somewhere terrible with an awful manager and lose every week, which they lost his debut, it just doesn't quite hold true when the other option... And it is a risk because you do have that Lewis Baker aspect, but he had all his loan moves as well. But are you necessarily being held back if you're not playing week in, week out, when there are other options available, like the Foden one that is the one that keeps coming to my mind?
Phil Foden is incredibly good and has been considered like the best young player in England since he was about 14.
And so that's it. But why wouldn't he benefit from playing professional games?
I suppose because his technical ability is good enough to train with Man City's first team from a younger age, maybe they see him as...
I guess it's how we see Gelhardt, isn't
easier
it?
I guess it is a bit. And it's the difference, I suppose, between like the Luke Ayling trajectory of someone who was not good enough for Arsenal at that time. And he thought, well, I can't stay here. Because
I think there's a sense that maybe, yeah, he's out there finding his level, which actually the real elite talent doesn't have to do that is the point you're making.
But then what's interesting with drama in particular is that Bielsa, he said specifically, I don't think he needed to play games elsewhere. So his view of his ability and his talents was that he's not Foden level, I don't think he ever will be, but that he will get everything he needs from training with players of the quality of Liam Cooper. And I always pick on Liam Cooper. You know, we don't have a Bernardo Silva to put next to him, but basically his view is he's good enough to be in a Premier League squad and he will learn everything he needs to learn from being in a Premier League squad and training with Leeds United. And it's Drama who thinks, no, actually, or maybe it's Drama's lack of confidence in himself that he doesn't see himself at that level that without games. And I'm not saying that that's hard and fast the wrong thing to do. I'm just interested that more and more players and more clubs are just going, no, actually, we'll keep them in-house. And Bielsa's view is if a player is really good, he thinks they'll learn everything they need to learn from training at Leeds and being in the squad and available. And they won't all be Foden's, but that's the best place to give them the education that will serve them better. And interesting that Drama thinks the other thing that Bielsa said is like young players don't often get enough of a say in their own development. And this is an example of a player who wants to choose his own path.
And he did choose it to come to us. He's not been with us since he was 8 or anything. So we signed him like, was it 2 years ago from Fulham? And he came to us because he could see more of a pathway into the first team, didn't he? So I guess if he's now seeing that there isn't that pathway.
I guess the weird thing is he just got in the team and he would have played at West Ham probably, or he'd have at least been on the bench. And
yeah, he was getting there, wasn't he? That's the thing.
And it's where you draw the line as well of like whether it's because we're saying on the other show about how what's great about all our young players is that when they get in the team, they absolutely are ready because we train them to be ready to play in the Premier League every week. So if what you're doing, because that's the other part of it, is if what you're doing from Monday to Friday in training is working the job of a Premier League footballer as if you're going to be playing on Saturday, and then all that happens on Saturday is, well, Luke Ayling's fit, so you're not playing. Surely you're getting a better work experience than being trained by Steve Morrison and his half-wit mates from Monday to Friday to prepare you to be ready to for a lower half championship match.
You've killed Michael.
You know, what's a better use of your time during the week compared to what you do on the weekend? It's kind of and you don't end up with the minutes on the pitch. But
yeah, I get it.
There's a balance, and I'm not saying, as I said, I don't think one is right and one is wrong, but it's interesting that it seems like it's changing from the old.
I heard loads of 7-Up when you said halfway, mate.
The easy old rule of you have to go out on loan to get experience doesn't seem like it's as relevant as it was.
Now he's gone.
Mm. He's irrelevant.
Let's just say how shit he was against Arsenal.
Get yourself together, Michael.
It feels like he's probably not going to come back from this, doesn't it? But
yeah, not while Bielsa's here, I don't
think. Best of luck to him.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And whatever. That's the kind of positive family environment we want to foster. Anyway, the under-23s beat Derby 2-0 in York. Great goal by Amari Miller. Charlie Allen got the second late on. Probably the last time we'll play their 23s before they go bust. Mm.
We can have them, can't we? I suppose we'll have whoever's left.
Yeah.
That might help the under-23s stay up as well if Derby go bust, because they are... I think we've overtaken them on points now, but they have a game in hand, and they were just above us in the relegation at the bottom of Premier 2 Division.
We also beat Wigan in the Premier League Cup, didn't we? Max Dean scored that absolute scorcher. And LUFC women through to the semi-final of the County Cup, won 4-0 at Harrogate Town. Laura Bartop with another goal, scores for fun these days, and a couple of others from, Soares Martin got two, Elliot another. Good win, that.
And I think they play some league games again soon, because it has been a very long time since they've had any.
There's a really, when you talk about the fixture congestion and pile-ups, there's a really weird thing at this level where the County Cup takes priority over everything. So if there's a County Cup game to be played, the league matches have to move, and right. It always screws everything up, especially because you get drawn against a little pit village in the West Riding County Cup.
Barnsley.
That plays on
Bradford Park Avenue.
That plays on a cabbage patch in December and January, and they can't get the game on, and you have to keep delaying week and week until you find a pitch that you can play them on.
Right.
It's always a mess.
Just hopefully they'll get promoted and into the, is it the National League next we decided?
Well, you get to basically step three, the step below the championship, and then it's the Super League above that. But I think we still get dragged into the County Cup just for being in, unless we succeed from Yorkshire.
It's January. You're definitely moving house. And if you aren't moving house, you probably should be, because you can take advantage of our extra discount on your legal fees with Levi Solicitors. You may know by now, if you've been listening to this show, you get 10% off your legal fees if you go through us, levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. That is upped to 15% on conveyancing instructions. So if you get your quote sorted out before the end of January 2022, Levi's will honour that. 15% off the legal fees part of your conveyancing quote. So are you going to finally bow to our pressure from last week, Moscow, and move house?
I did instruct you last week to buy a house, and you've not done it yet.
Yeah.
You've not brought it with you anyway.
Well, it's isn't it a longer process that needs expert advice from people who will...
Are you saying I'm not an expert?
I'm saying that I maybe need a second opinion from some experienced and lead supporting solicitors.
Conveyancers.
Which is the thing, and they can convey to me what it is I need to do to buy a house while only charging me 75% of what they normally would, because I've
done it before
the end of January.
Your maths is
85%. 85%.
Oh, Moscow, never change. Yes. Have a look at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball.
What's the discount, to be clear?
15% on your legal fees. 100 minus 15 is 85, Moscow.
Unless Moscow wishes to make up the difference.
Which he will, I believe. This is part two of the show, then, where we will preview the upcoming match. We are playing Newcastle at home, 3 o'clock on a Saturday, which is something of a rare beast in this modern era of Premier League football. Sum them up in a sentence.
Rich but shit is what I wrote on the prep sheet. And it probably, yeah. That kind of is where they are right now. They got rid of Bruce, though. At least that fixed them, because he was always the problem, wasn't he?
Mike Ashley's gone, so they've now got excellent ownership, impeccable.
Well, feel-good factor.
I know we are just joking around to hideously tempt fate here, but the bare facts of it are Bruce had 10 games, couldn't get a win. Eddie Howe's now had 10 games, and they've only got one win, 4 draws, 5 defeats. They look to be in a world of trouble, and the most recent game against Watford, they weren't good, were they? And I know they're kind of pinning all the hopes on getting more players in, but you wonder if that'll fix it for them.
The games are running out for them, aren't they? That's the thing. It's if they need to win this. A few weeks ago, it looked like it would be must win for us, Probably not anymore. We win, we're pretty much comfortable, I would say, for several months. We'll probably be all right. A draw's no good for them anymore.
I
win this.
Made this point on the match ball, didn't I? Like, a draw is fine for us now, having won at West Ham. It would keep them at the same distance that they are now.
I mean, I think we should win.
Yeah.
Because it'd just make things nice and comfortable for us for a while, as I say. But yeah, they've got to win at some point, haven't they? They can't just keep saying, we'll buy some more players. We'll buy some more players, because they've only got a couple of weeks left to do that. And truthfully, they need about 10, because most of their team is not very good.
No, it's not. I mean, I watched all of the Watford game, and it was a remarkably low quality game, was that. And it actually goes back to what you were saying. I think it was on the match ball, Moscow, and something you've said across the season is that we've always had more in the tank at Leeds. It's always felt like we've got more, even if it's just latent quality in there on the displays of this season. But it's finally, it feels like we're starting to see more of it now. Whereas with Newcastle, you just wonder where they can get to if they don't sign anybody else. I'd say it looks like the Championship, doesn't it? But the qualifier here is that there are four teams down there and only three can go down.
Yeah, I mean, they will probably come out of the transfer window with a far better squad than they went into it with, which I don't think will be the case for Norwich or Burnley or Watford. So they probably will still always have a chance, because those four do look all pretty terrible. It's probably going to be like last season, where we were panicking about Fulham catching us for absolutely ages, and then in the end, like 30 points would have been enough to stay up. And when you look at how far off 30 points we are, there's really not very much to go at all. So you just don't know where that mark is going to be, though, do you? And if we win this, it puts us needing so few points, actually, from the remainder of the season, that we can probably be relatively comfortable.
And just going back to the experience of earlier in the season when we wore the lilac kit and we didn't get the Dan James penalty, we should have beaten them that game, shouldn't we, really? We let them get a foothold back in the game.
Was it Junior Firpo's miss?
Yeah, he volleyed it over the bar from about 6 yards.
He was talking about that last week as well in his interview on Radio Leeds. He's not forgotten. Because he was asked about attacking and how he felt about going forward. And he's like, well, you've seen me in the box. And he was like, as if it was still kind of bothering him. And he was like, yeah, I hope I score a goal soon to kind of put that behind me. It is now, when you look at Newcastle's results, they've won one game, 1-0 against Burnley.
Which almost doesn't count.
No. And it's a big, it is a kind of a big miss in our season, I think, that we didn't get the points up there. We didn't play badly, did we?
No, first half, we were all over them. We could have been 2 or 3 up by the time that Firpo's put it over the bar. We've had a Stonewall penalty not given. They'd had a couple of chances, but we looked by far the better team in that game. And it also, the game was disrupted a bit with, I think, Ayling and Bamford both went off injured, didn't they?
Yeah, it's the day when Bielsa was saying last week that he asked Bamford to keep playing, even though he was injured, and we had all sorts of problems. But it's... It was interesting, the start of our game against West Ham, when we had Forshaw and Firpo. And if you look at how good we were, I know it's all ifs and buts because it didn't happen because they were injured, but if only that starting 11 had played the whole game, would we have won 10-0? As I felt like we might. But we were, whenever we've got not even the full first team, but close to it, we've looked good again. Like, you can't really say, this is talking about us again instead of Newcastle, but what was really different from our performance at West Ham and the best of last season? Absolutely the same. But Dan James is a striker and Bates in midfield and Yelda's at left back. And yet somehow we found a level of performance that took us to 9th last season. Newcastle, no matter, I don't care who they sign, I don't care how good the players are that they put on the pitch, I just don't see them getting out of a first half of the season. 22 games, well, the two were postponed, so they've played 19 or 20. They've played a lot of games and they've won one, and I just don't see, I don't know who they think they can sign, or how many players they think they can sign that is immediately going to just turn them into a team that wins games. Because it just, if they couldn't beat, you know, Chris Wood, Kieran Trippier, good signings on paper, spent a lot of money, we know that they have certain skills and abilities that you'd think would be helpful. And they drew with Watford, who were awful. So what's your way out, Newcastle? Your way out, Dan.
If Newcastle, looking at their fixtures, if they're going to get out of it, it's going to be within the next month, because they play us, Everton, Villa, West Ham, Brentford, Brighton. If they can't get the points out of those games, then they're into like the end of the season.
And already...
They're simply run out of matches.
Yeah, and already it's a massive ask, isn't it? So as each game goes by, it's tough, isn't it? It's funny, I see parallels with us earlier in the season with Newcastle in that, I mean, I say this as an outsider, I don't watch them every week, but you get the impression it's almost give it to Saint-Maximin and hope that something happens, which was a little bit like us earlier in the season when we were kind of devoid of ideas, injuries a bit, and it was like, give it to Rafinha and hope something happens. Mm-hmm. Whereas actually, we feel like a lot more of a rounded team now based on the West Ham performance and the way things have been sort of gradually creeping forward in recent weeks.
Yeah, I mean, people like Harrison coming back into a bit of form, as he was so badly out of sorts at points this season, wasn't he? But because of weaknesses in the squad and injuries, we just had to keep playing him, basically. So, I mean, there was, whereas we would have probably had James playing instead of him for a time, James was needed to play up front. So we had to keep Harrison there, and there was just a lack of options.
I was going to say, it goes back to, remember in the championship, in the promotion season, where we were saying, just give Bamford a rest when he was out of form, but we didn't have the luxury of doing that. And we had to kind of just play our way through it and play back into form. But on the flip side of that is huge credit to them for going through it and coming out the other side and playing their way back into form. And it feels like we've sort of done that a little bit this season.
Yeah, I mean, Newcastle have never hit anything like form. I mean, they followed up their one win with three losses on the bounce. Admittedly, Liverpool and Man City and Leicester are not exactly easy teams to beat, but there's nothing there. And in looking at Eddie Howe's games that he's had, if you're going to go through as a relegation team and penciling games, you're probably targeting wins like Brentford and Norwich at home and Watford at home. You think, well, you've got to probably get something from those, and you know, to scrape a few draws out of them is not enough. So. Mm.
They drew 1-1 away to Watford at the end of September, and then they drew 1-1 at home to Watford. So roles have spent in this window, they've got no better. And Howe's replaced Bruce, they've got no better.
Well, they've
Chris Wood's an interesting.
Well, I was just going to say we've got another chance to look at Chris Wood about what I was about to come on to. So let's do him.
Would you have brought him back? Because we, like, it's maybe easing a little bit now, but last week we had no strikers and we watched Newcastle sign Christopher Wood for 25 million. And they clearly believe he can score enough goals to overhaul the teams above them. Should we have gone for him?
No, not for that money.
No, not for over 20, but that's the price of a footballer these days, isn't it?
If he was available on loan for 3 months, yes. Or, you know, for £5 million, maybe.
I mean, it might be enough to snooker Burnley, but then you've obviously got to then overcome Watford, which is why I think there was almost double jeopardy placed on the game last week.
Would you, if the price was no object, would you want him back?
I think he's a perfectly good Premier League striker.
That's what I said to my mate, who's a Newcastle fan, who texted me about what's he like, and I said, well, he's a perfectly fine Premier League striker. He's not, you know, he's not going to be a Champions League.
He's quite good in the air.
Level goal scorer, is he?
Reasonable technically, sort of knows where to stand.
Worked great.
It's fine. Probably not for us. Mm. Fine for most teams. But yeah, I wouldn't have been desperate to have him back. I think, as a rule, I tend to not want us to sign players who we've already had, because it just rarely works. And when you look back, it's one of those things that teams get obsessed with having players that they've had before. It's like the 10 years we had to be linked with Alan Smith. Brian Dean's second spell was fine.
Lee Chapman's not so much.
John Lukic's second spell.
Yeah.
Won the title.
True. But his first spell was, I don't know, it was in a weird wilderness period. People tend to want to bring back, like, people who did, like Chris Wood, because he scored 30 goals with it. It's like, he'll do that again.
David Batty was all right.
Times change.
Yeah, when GFH promised they were going for Gradle.
Yeah, then for zero money. We put in a bid of £10. Let's see if it's accepted.
You know, if GFH was still in charge, they'd be going for him now at 34 years old. One of the stars of AFCON. But as it is, it's Chris Wood. As we're saying about, like, in the run-up to the West Ham game, I think the same almost applies to Chris Wood here, is you know what you're going to get. You know what we're going to face this weekend in the shape of Chris Wood. I guess the issue is he's cutting off supply to Saint-Maximin is how you win this, isn't it? And playing on the front foot. And I think it feels like at the minute Leeds United are playing on the front foot, and that this win, I mean, two wins on the bounce, 100% record in 2022 in the league, best record in the division.
I mean, how many games?
Is it two?
I mean, it's two games. That's another way of putting it, but I suppose to look at it another way, that's twice as many as Newcastle have won all season. So
yeah.
So that's good, isn't it? We've done that in just a couple of weeks.
And I think, obviously, we can leave it up to Bielsa and the players to go, like, you know, how do we deal with Chris Wood, put Pascal Stroik on him? That would be my answer. And then, you know, cutting off supply to Saint-Maximin, and who's, you know, can we stifle Shelby's creativity? I think we just beat them because they're a bunch of losers.
go down well.
They are. Look, they've won once and they've not even drawn that many.
I mean, this is that massive banana skin, isn't it, of when we sit here and we predict games, and like you look at it and you look at all the evidence, where we are, where they are, so we should win this. Not necessarily at a canter, I think that would be being disrespectful, but based on the two teams, confidence, how they're playing, how we've played in recent weeks, there's no reason why we shouldn't.
And the influence of pressure comes to bear as well, because Newcastle have to win this game, otherwise they've no hope. But then they really had to beat Watford, and they drew. And us, under the pressure when we needed to start the year with a win over Burnley, and we just beat them 3-1. It wasn't a problem. I don't think our peers, and I think there's maybe, I don't know if it's not an advantage to being in this part of the table, but it's become pretty clear to Leeds United what we need to do now, which is not get relegated, get out of the situation that we're in, beat the teams around us, and stop fussing. Whereas in the earlier part of the season, when we still hadn't worked out if we're, are we going for Europe? Is that dream still alive? Are we gonna get relegated? What is the team trying to do this season? It was all a bit unclear, and so there was a sense of kind of disappointment. Whereas with that clarity against Burnley of they are a rival, if we don't beat them, we're in danger of going to the Championship, and we win. And I think we're responding to pressure better than this bunch of dirty money losers.
That's the thing. It's a shame almost that it's happened to Newcastle, because I used to quite like them in a way, and I want Newcastle in the Premier League because I like it as an away ground. I want to go there because it's fun.
Mm. We've always felt quite like similar, but it's great parallels between the two clubs in terms of one club city and.
But it's just impossible to. It's impossible to love them now.
Can't root for them, can you?
No, you just think, well, I basically only want bad things to happen to them. Yeah. So
in the new issue of the Squareball magazine, Miles Rowcroft has written about what Newcastle may end up paying for the success that they may or may not have, not this season. But the idea of Manchester City now can't sell out the stadium anymore. A lot of the passion is gone. They get to Wembley and nobody wants to go because they were there 3 seasons running. And the Newcastle of all clubs to kind of trade in what they have been for that. And he has a great line where he says, if you met a Newcastle United fan, you'd always think you can have a conversation with them about football. You'd start, oh, what good players have you got and how are you doing this season? It would be an interesting kind of just a football fan conversation. Whereas now you come up against this, well, and it's not all of them, obviously. There's still the nice people who've retained some dignity and integrity and self-respect. But you come up against this wall of, well, we've got £200 million, so we're going to sign Mbappe. And that total lack of realism and lack of interest, that's not even an interesting thing to do, is it? It's like, I'd love to watch Messi playing for Leeds, but it's not an interesting attitude. And it's then hilarious when they sign Chris Wood and get relegated anyway.
All things being equal, we win this one, don't we?
You can't argue otherwise. we are better than them and at home and in better form.
And we earn Eddie Howe the sack with Rafa Benitez.
It would not surprise me at all.
And it would be bloody brilliant. Especially now that it looks like, I mean, Everton have their own problems that Benitez stepped into, but I don't think he's the manager he was. Certainly the evidence of since leaving Newcastle points that way. So the perfect new messiah to keep them in the Championship for the next 3 or 4 seasons, I would welcome. But then, I mean, I don't know if Eddie Howe gets them promoted.
I mean, I think Eddie Howe would probably be quite grateful to be sacked, because I'm sure he's paid well. He'd essentially probably be getting like a few million quid for a couple of months' work. Lovely stuff.
I'd do it.
Yeah, great stuff. I'm on.
Maybe stay out of the embassy, though.
Yeah.
This podcast brought to you in association with The Athletic. You can use our sign-up discount if you fancy at theathletic.com/thesquareball, and we'll catch up with Phil later on this week. I told you, didn't I, that we would win this game down at West Ham?
You've said that many times
stopped
this season.
Stopped clock and all that.
You've been wrong nearly always.
But I will enjoy having bragging rights over the pair of you in the podcast studio when we record on Thursday.
I mean, my misery, I don't go on about how right I am, do I? When we've been spanked it all over the place. But no, well done this week.
Oh, thank you very much. Look out for the Phil Hayes Show in your podcast feed towards the end of the week. theathletic.com/thesquareball to sign up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
We're doing heroes and villains now, then we'll pick a good and bad person from the last 7 days. The first part of that is the Ken Bates Villain of the Week Award. We caught responses from our TSB Plus members to find out who they think should win these awards. They send us their feedback. We'll also input our own thoughts into this. What should we do first? And let's have a look.
Let's launch straight into Adam Forshaw as a villain, eh?
Because of his...
Because of his injury.
The cheese strings, not hamstrings, aren't they?
Jelly nominates him. Clearly waited until he was offered a new contract before deliberately going back on the sick. I hope they built statutory sick pay into his contract this time. So he's going to be at 120 quid a week or whatever it is.
Thatcher's children.
Whatever it is.
I would pluck the back of his thighs like a cheese string banjo given half the chance.
But yeah, he did get a few nominations, but they are tongue in cheek.
Well, one step removed from that, hamstrings themselves
in general.
Picked out by Suffolk Coda and Lee and Cheese saying hamstrings themselves. What's the point in them? Lee and Cheese is saying, what's the point of them?
I'm sure a medical man would explain what the point of them is.
If they didn't exist, we'd have 95% of the team available.
If the hamstring didn't exist, would you invent it?
No.
Is it like an appendix? You can do without it. It's best to just have it removed.
Yeah.
Although I'm really certain you need them for running and kicking and stuff.
Well, they are a group of three muscles that run along the back of your thigh from your hip to just below your knee. So, I mean, there's the first start. Three muscles. What's wrong with one?
Masquerading under one banner.
It's tripling the chance of an injury. So I can immediately see opportunities to save.
Excellent. VAR and the ref obviously get nominations. The rules in general are folded in with VAR.
Yeah, I mean, I included the rules because some people are saying it was wrong that our goal was disallowed, but it wasn't really VAR's fault. It's the rules that are there.
It's morals come into this goal in particular, yeah. Don't they? That it's kind of like morally it should be a goal. But then if football's morals allow the Saudi Arabian takeover of Newcastle United, then why do we have to be moral and rule this goal out? So I think my point is clear.
Yeah, I think, Gary particularly picks out the morals, actually, Gary Furnival, but also Benny Lux says, trying to avoid the ball on the goal line is interfering with play. Nicking the ball off the goalkeeper is not. What a load of old arse. And that's the frustration from the last 7 days with regards to that, isn't it? Mike Dean specifically picked out by Paul for the disallowed goal. Was it his fault? I'm not sure. But also, his bigger crime was not giving the match ball to Jackie immediately.
I didn't know this. Was he doing it in a jokey way?
He does it every time. He does. It's a standard joke. He either pretends that the Premier League footballer in front of him is a toddler. He goes, I don't know where the ball is. Can you find the ball?
Putting it up his shirt.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Or he's just like, no, there's nothing in the rules to say that you can have this ball. I'm only joking. And I'm sure every single time people have... Although actually, I don't know. It's the first hat trick Jackie has scored for us. I don't know if it's the first one he's scored in his career. It might be. So maybe that chucklesome Mike Dean routine is all just part of the joyful experience of Scunny. Might have, when he gets home, he'll have been telling his girlfriend all night, and then you'll never guess what the referee was doing. Oh, tell me again, Jackie.
I imagine there was a moment. Did you think this? You know, when Mike Dean at one point dropped his yellow card, I had flashbacks to Gazza, you know, when he picked up the yellow card in Scotland and pretended to book the ref, who then booked him back in return. I had visions of Mike Dean doing that. You know, when he dropped his yellow card, if somebody had picked it up and handed it back to him, he seems like the sort of guy who'd do that.
I think Mike Dean would go along with it because I think he likes to be seen as pally. It's like when he was on the front row of the Tranmere fans punching in the air. He wants to be everybody's mate. So if that kind of thing happened, he'd probably like playfully knock them out.
Loads of people picking out Jared Bowen for, first of all, shushing the Leeds fans, but then chesting the ball over... over the bar.
Yeah, he gets both hero and villain nominations, does Bowen, for essentially all for the same thing, for the shushing and then the miss.
A foot in either camp.
Yeah. So we should probably just deal with him all at once. I mean, the shushing thing. I suppose it's fine. I prefer it to the daft dancing business that's been going on at Elm Road. And I feel like at home ground, it's a safer thing to do.
Yeah.
If he scores in front of the cop,
mind you, the fans are so far. The fans are so far away. There's no danger of anything, is there?
That's true. Unless you've got one of the Olympic javelin throwers in the crowd who can reach him with.
Just happens to have forgotten where they were and they're hanging around
with a bottle there.
I like Rafinha's dancing.
Okay, fair enough.
Just saying.
I don't mind it when our players do it.
I think with Bowen and his shushing, if it had been not just a spawny header from a corner that everybody, I could score a header from a corner against Leeds United. It's not difficult.
So visions of you throwing your frail body towards a ball.
I would give it a go against our pathetic set piece defender. So it's not like he did anything good. If he'd banged it in from 30 yards and wanted to run around shushing everybody, that's absolutely fine. But just, you know.
And it was only a shush. It wasn't a big dance.
I enjoyed Ben's comments though. Bowen pointing to your shirt and on your name and a sly grin after equalising. Practice scoring with your chest more, you slug.
Slug is a great insult. We often look at weight of nominations as a good indicator as to where this award should go. And David Moyes, by some distance, has run away with the volume of nominations. Katie, Chris, Jeff P., Boney M. back, Mark Worthington as well. Hello to all you and all the other people who nominated Moyes. Ender, in particular, says Moyes for being an ungracious, whiny little bitch. I mean, it's hard to argue with it, is it? About the whole three games in a week. And the fact that he hasn't managed his players. I mean, we managed to manage our players despite an injury crisis that has spiraled out of control and was exacerbated again in this game, and we still won.
He did just keep talking about it as well, like Moscow said. Like, I kind of would think, I've seen this interview before, but no, it was the same interview he did for Sky, did for Match of the Day, did for the press. It was just the same old bloody. I mean, I know it, I do accept as a manager, it must be really tedious having to do the same, being asked the same question over and over again, and you probably do just lapse into the same thing, but it just made it sound all the more whingy.
The flip side of this is that we've been spoiled by Bielsa, isn't it? Because he's so humble and he's got so much humility about stuff like this, and he never complains about anything. The closest we've seen actually is the sarcasm on the touchline for the VAR disallowed goal in this game. But I mean, West Ham Ralph, your mate Ralph, says, who the fuck does he think he is? Talking about Moyes, not you.
Well, he's got the Old Trafford head still. Yeah.
Complaining about scheduling like there's no tomorrow, but can still have a very strong team and bench, and just talks about the self-entitlement. And it's the same with like Arsenal as well. We're going to end up with a manager post Bielsa who will trot out some of these cliches. But by then, this is why we end up with the Chileans are known as the widows of Bielsa, because you never get over somebody so pure, do you? He's the purest man ever.
And it's not only the purity, it's we won. And at a particular moment when I mentioned on one of the other episodes, the Telegraph article saying Bielsa's methods are just breaking player after player, and it's about time he thought about the way that he's training these players and he needs to calm it down. And there's been a lot of questions to Bielsa about that. He's had to sort of defend it. He says, common sense might dictate that I should moderate the training, but these are the reasons why I don't do it. And all that's been in the mix is like the big question of Bielsa is burning these players out. And against West Ham, we had two more players injured. We already had nine that weren't fit to start. So you can say, there's an argument that something's going wrong. But we won. And at the end of it, David Moyes, who he has the odd injury, they've been missing some defenders, and he was being weird about who doesn't have COVID or not, lost and whined. And who has managed this situation better? You can only play what's in front of you. We'll have to play Liverpool and Aston Villa at some point this season, and it will probably be inconvenient for us, especially with the way our squad has been stretched and probably will continue to be stretched. But I think it was an indication that Bielsa had a better idea of how to manage his players through the last 7 days with two games than David Moyes with his three. And that's, you can't just moan on about circumstances all the time. At some point, you've got to take responsibility and say, what is your method for doing this? And Bielsa's methods, which are constantly criticised, were right. David Moyes' method was just to run all his players in the ground for, you know, Michael Antonio, who was complaining about being tired. He played him three times that week, full appearances each time. Don't do that. Then he won't be as tired. You're cretin.
There was a fighting woman in the in the upper tier, scrapping with Leeds fans, says Jerry. Says she was very impressive and maybe should be a hero, actually. Putting in some good windmilling, maybe. Maybe somebody insulted her precious boys. You don't say that about my boys. About my family. On that, the concept of West Ham comes in for some attention from Wisconsin Todd. Specifically picks out Bubbles, not Michael Jackson's friend, but the little machines that they had by the side of the pitch. Says West Ham's entire club culture rotates on an axis consisting of a couple of $20 bubble machines pried away from a third-rate wedding reception. At least at Upton Park, they sort of filled part of the ground. At their vacuous new place, it just looks like a methane leak in their giant, characterless shit heap.
Though the bubbles did give a nice picture of Bielsa. Did you see that one with the bubbles in front of him? Just him smiling.
They didn't. They don't even have that big picture of Bobby Moore that used to frown over the pitch anymore. At
I think everyone in East London has to have a picture of Bobby Moore in their house, don't they? Is that still the case?
Did we cover this in one of the many, many West Ham previews that we've done? I know I put it in the email newsletter, but when you're talking about what defines West Ham, it's bubbles and Bobby Moore. But his domestic honours, FA Cup.
Are you about to go to trash Bobby Moore now?
No.
Oh, okay.
He's an absolutely superb defender, one of the greatest footballers you'd ever wish to see. But his domestic honours, FA Cup, and then...
What about his shopping habits?
FA Cup, 64, Charity Shield, 64, Cup Winners' Cup, 65, and that's it. Because he spent his entire playing career, apart from a few seasons at the end at Fulham, for West Ham United, who, despite having one of the world's greatest defenders, and then also Jeff Hurst, who scored the brilliant goals that won the World Cup for England, Martin Peters as well, they were so chronic, they never even got close to winning anything. So Bobby Moore, one of the greatest players of all time, certainly from this country, ends up with a playing career with basically an empty trophy cabinet because West Ham were pathetic and couldn't win anything for him or even with him. Even when he went to play for Fulham for four seasons, when he's a very old man, got to an FA Cup final, which is all he needed, and they were in Division Two. They got close to glory as West Ham had done for 10 years.
Are you saying Bobby Moore had to look elsewhere for silverware?
He was the runner-up for the Ballon d'Or in 1970, and West Ham had not won anything for 5 years and did not win anything for another 5 years with him in the team. And I feel like, and then they've got the temerity to put a massive picture of him up at West Ham.
How could you dare?
At Upton Park.
Put up a picture of one of your club legends.
Bobby Moore hated that club.
He would have been well within his rights.
They held him back.
Probably when, 1964, when they'd won the FA Cup for the first time with him in the team, you're like, all right, I'll get a big old trophy cabinet for the Manor. And I'll fill that with stuff. And then
I'll acquire some of my own things for it.
Well, to be fair, his individual honours, Footballer of the Year, West Ham Player of the Year. They only gave it him four times. It was better. FIFA World Cup All-Star Team, BBC Sports Personality of the Year. He got an OBE, World Soccer 11, Football Hall of Fame, UEFA Jubilee Awards, the FIFA World Cup All-Time Team, the FIFA Order of Merit, World Team of the 20th Century. So his huge array of Bobby Moore honours, and then a little corner for his West Ham bloody tin pot mug.
Anyway,
they held that man back.
Kisnorbo's kneecaps picks out just the whole concept of games against West Ham. Bit middling though, doesn't overly like them, but don't overly dislike them. And
hopefully, maybe I've changed his opinion now.
And Philip actually goes in on the whole concept of London. You can stick your hoodoo right up your drum roll. I believe that pretty much wraps it up, doesn't it? Rodrigo's arse gets a few nominations.
Arsenal and Arteta got plenty.
Yeah.
I think it all comes under the banner of Moyes, doesn't it? That kind of stuff.
Although, to be fair to Moyes, he had the decency to play the games.
He tried to get it called off.
Oh, did he?
Yes,
he said. What an absolute
scumbag. And he was saying that after the Arsenal called their game off, he was saying, well, we should have fought harder to get ours called off. So they tried, and I think they approached it more from the point of view of saying, what do you mean we have to play? What gives? And now he's saying, now he's seen what Arsenal did, we should have gone back and just said, well, we're not. Because they had a case of COVID, and then he should have, I don't know, hobbled some more of his players to get it off. But
the thing that's really annoyed people about Arsenal is that they've got players at AFCON, they've got Granit Xhaka suspended.
Their own fault.
Yeah, things that they... That
two
were
players
entirely,
they loaned out.
Yeah, things that are entirely predictable, like Granit Xhaka being suspended and your African players playing for their countries.
Those are all things that are going to happen in January.
Yeah, exactly. So...
And they also, it wasn't that they didn't have enough players available, it was that they were submitting as evidence the load that the players had been under in the games that they've been playing. I think that's where David Moyes is kind of like, well, I thought the rules were just how many fit players you had. Now I learned that we could have span it that, you know, Antonio's a bit tired. Then
right,
we could have done that. So
it's a big Moyes, boy. Imagine having to carry around that torso.
Graham Souness does get a couple of mentions for his little sly dig before the game, but he counterbalanced that after the game by saying how great we were. So he's probably managed to.
I didn't mind his dig. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, eradicating his crimes there. But
Rodrigo's ass got a few.
I've already mentioned that. Yeah.
I don't think we can mention it enough. Shapely. Just inconvenient.
Yeah, Lewis Bake got a mention actually as well.
He feels a bit villain.
Looked on the verge of doing a Pablo at Leicester. We can't afford a Bielsa bomb out at the moment, kid.
He held it together, hasn't he?
It hasn't come to that yet, has it? Let's pick a villain of the week then. By weight of nominations, it should be Moyes. Bowen, a close second for a dishonourable mention.
Give it to Moyes.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, Moyes, for just Premier League entitlement and poor squad management.
And not even being smart enough to get the game called off.
Yeah. The Gaetano Berardi Hero of the Week Award. Now, please, let's do nominations for Leeds players right at the start. We've got a number. So Jackie gets nominations, obviously,
for everyone.
A hat trick.
There's probably no point even listing everyone.
You don't think so?
Because it was everyone.
It's going to be Jackie, isn't it, then? But should we just...
I mean, he's got a hat trick. It'd be very unfair to not give it to him, wouldn't it? But
if one of them is off your crotch, does it count?
Yes.
I mean, it's not the greatest goal you've ever seen, is it? Well, the other one's just, click out the shot, Forshaw gave him... I don't know why I'm trying to whack you.
People talk about perfect hat tricks, don't they?
Mm. Left bollock, right bollock.
Never features, does it?
Right. But Strouk gets nomination. Melier
gets a lot.
Yes.
Benny Lux describes him as the best defender at the club, which is interesting.
He could well be. He certainly will be soon.
Melier, as Ken Taylor picks out, says, yes, Jackie got the goals, but Ilian kept us in the game, which is true. Some really good point blank saves, as Philip picks out.
Made a cockney want to kill him. He was that good.
Yeah, I would really, in response to that, like amp up the heroism of Melier. I don't know what that guy's problem was. He should stick to playing Roblox or whatever it's called. Robloos.
This is Tickle Me by Adsham saying, Dan James, Jackie will rightly win, but that little scum bastard didn't stop grafting and properly got stuck in. He gets it. I love how he's still a little scum bastard.
I mean, we thought a leaping scum salmon was the the phrase the other week, wasn't
it? But
this
is all framed in the same way that Kasper Schmeichel doesn't get the joke and continues to not get the joke. We should have mentioned him actually in Villains because he's still a big crybaby, but draining little prick.
You said on Saturday, I think not on a recording, that we will still be calling Dan James a little scum bastard. That's his testimonial. We'll give him a big silver platter and back. Thank you.
Engraved little scum bastard.
Thank you for 10 years of service, you little scum bastard. You've been absolutely superb.
Did Strachan get any of this? Because he was an elder statesman, was he more? Was he not kind of thrown in with that?
Well, I think this is just...
I think because James feels, because he's so little and young looking, I think he feels bullyable, which I think is why we end up calling him a little scum bastard.
And I think,
despite the fact he's good,
there's the fact of how the whole transfer blew up in the first place when we were going to sign him, and then he ended up there, and it felt like an affront, didn't it? So, but now we've kind of healed it, and we can laugh about. We're laughing about it. So if we were all in the pub having this discussion, and Dan James was sat on that side of the table, we'd be ribbing him and calling him a little
scum. Go get the drinks, James.
Little scum prick.
As long as he's got his ID.
Yeah, bless him.
The youngsters and Archie Gray got some love for proving to Arsenal that you can play or be ready to play for in a game without crying.
And let's big up, I don't think it's down here because it only happened last night, but big ups to Mark Jackson and the Jacko generation for winning two games in the last week when all of the players are playing for the first team. And we even... in the game last night against Derby, it was McKinstry who was injured after 15 minutes and carried off looking like he'll be absent for a long time. Archie Gray comes on and the first thing that happens is the big heavy tackle and he goes down and they have to have the physio on for him. So it's, and even Max Dean scored the second goal 10 minutes after he'd been lying flat on his back with cramp and looking like he would probably not be able to continue. And yet somehow 2 minutes later, he's absolutely bombing forward to get a goal. So the kind of the youngsters in general, not just the ones in the first team, but the ones that Jacko is looking after, well, breaking, have had a good week.
Yep. And like Yelda, as one of those who has sort of graduated into the first team in this last week or two, he gets a mention. Bate again, specifically picked out. Dallas gets some love as well. He's not an under 23, although he probably would play for them if you asked him. The FA Cup. Lean Cheese picks out the FA Cup for installing fake hope into those lanky southern piss pots, which I enjoyed very much. Yeah, it's going to be Jackie, isn't it? Any other ones you want to mention before we wrap it up? Norwich for tiring out West Ham. Luke and Boney M pick
out. And losing to them as well, yep. Which was the crucial thing as well for the... It was the perfect perfect ploy. It was. They did it in quite a good way because one of the reasons Antonio, I think, had to stay on was because it was only 1-0 until the very end. So there was never really like a comfort zone for Moyes to make any changes, even though he probably... Norwich.
That's what they call the area of space behind the goal, you know, called the comfort zone.
It's Norwich. So take some players off, put some others on. You're still going to win. But they pushed it as far as they could. So well played to our Anglian friends.
But still being shit enough to lose.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Bielsa gets some mentions as well for his sarcasm. Jack C picks that out. 150th game in charge as well. Another good performance to stick in the list of good performances. So thanks, Marcelo. It's become fun again, hasn't it? But Jack Harrison. Hero of the week. Has to be, doesn't it?
It does.
Good hat trick. And that wraps up this show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with another weekly show with the news and the previews. Have we got a game after Newcastle? We haven't, have we?
No, there's a gap as it stands. But who knows?
International break when Rafinha goes away and we might have to play Liverpool or Villa against their protests. We'll play them anywhere. Mm. There's a car park out here.
Just play them in that void behind West Ham's goals. Play for them. Five aside. There's so many injuries and layoffs. Five aside.
It's pushing the London curse a little bit to start playing Liverpool in there.
Voluntarily.
Yeah, the Docklands.
Let's not do that. But yeah, check out the website as well if you want to get hooked up with a 1 month trial of TSB Plus, our membership package. Loads of stuff in there. Thesquareball.net/plus.
New magazine out. New t-shirt. New,
yep.
All sorts of stuff that is all great and that we can't do it unless we have the money.
What he's saying is thank you for supporting
us. You've got quite a crucial part to play in this.
We'll see you in a bit. Bye-bye.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.